From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, our weekly update of news and events from around Central and South America and the Caribbean with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo. Well, aside from the fifth anniversary of the passing of Hugo, wow, it's amazing that's going by so quickly. We got a lot to talk about, so let's dive right in. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi, Don. As usual, there's far too much going on to be able to cover it all. The main thing, and I think most people will agree that the most important thing that's going on in Latin America at the moment is the continuing attempts by the United States and its European allies and its regional allies to overthrow the government in Venezuela.
Yep.
I think that's going to continue to be the dominant issue in the region for at least the next 4, 5, 6 months. The latest developments there are that the opposition parties that are agreeing to take part in the elections had a meeting with the government and with the electoral authority, and the end result of all those talks was that The elections originally scheduled for something like April the 22nd, the presidential elections, have been rescheduled towards, I think it's the 20th of May, a month later. And they will include the legislative elections to regional legislative councils and municipal councils, and also the presidential election. So it's going to be a much more complex electoral process, but one that has the guaranteed participation of large sections of the Venezuelan opposition, including Henry Falcon, who's regarded as the most important moderate opposition leader. Not everybody's convinced that Nicolas Maduro will win. It's not a foregone conclusion. Although I personally think that he's more likely to win than not. But so much depends on what happens between now, obviously, between now and May 20th, when the elections are going to be held.
Yep.
On the international front, on the media psychological warfare front, on the economic sanctions front, the United States and its allies are keeping up the pressure. And Venezuela has been engaging in quite energetic diplomacy, both within the region and outside the region, internationally in Africa and Asia, to strengthen its position diplomatically. Obviously, the main forum that the United States is using for its diplomatic offensive is the Organization of American States, where they have Luis Almagro, the Secretary General there, completely committed to overthrowing the government of Nicolas Maduro by whatever means possible within that Organization of American States framework, whether that involves breaching the rules of his own organization or not, or exploiting in a completely unscrupulous way the Organization of American States structure for that purpose in the service of United States geopolitical regional objectives. But so far, he continues to come up against a very serious opposition to his plans. As we said last week, one of the important components that enabling Venezuela to resist that attempt to abuse the Organization of American States to intervene completely illegally in the internal affairs of a member country is CARICOM, the Caribbean Community Nations. To reinforce that, yesterday there was a summit of the heads of state of the ALBA countries, which still include Ecuador for the moment anyway, Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Bolivia, and several Caribbean island nations like St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Antigua and Barbuda, Dominica. And so the declaration, I'm just reading the declaration from that summit, and it focuses almost entirely on defending fundamental principles of international law, non-intervention in the internal affairs of another state, non-aggression and so forth, which the United States policy backed by Luis Almagro in the OAS completely violate. And of course, now there's this group called the Lima Group of countries like Colombia, Peru, Mexico, Chile, and other countries in the region. They call themselves the Lima Group. And that was set up as a way to kind of try and bypass the limitations on the Organization of American States.
Right.
And the Declaration of the ALBA countries explicitly condemns the position of these so-called Lima Group countries, and precisely because they are acting not only in clear breach of fundamental international legal principles, the principles established over the last 5 or 6 years by the community of Latin American and Caribbean states and the Union of South American Nations. So what the declaration states and what the leaders state is that the Lima Group of countries is putting in jeopardy efforts at regional integration. And that, I think, although that's obvious, it's very important that comes now as a formal statement from many of the leading countries in the sense of ideological leadership. These are countries like Nicaragua can speak authoritatively, Bolivia can speak authoritatively, because they have outstanding records of economic development, outstanding records of reducing poverty and inequality, and so they have the authority to speak out on behalf of the processes of regional integration that are being jeopardized by these countries like Peru, Colombia, Mexico, who talk about the difficult situation in Venezuela as though their own countries weren't in situations that even more difficult.
Look at Peru, for example. I just want two things. I want to reference, Article 19 of the OAS Charter, which is an absolute bar for any reason whatever, it says. It's a direct quote, directly or indirectly, to intervene in the internal affairs of any other state or external affairs, prohibiting not only armed force, but any other form of interference or attempted threat. Right. So there's no ambiguity there whatsoever. And the other is, we've done this before. We've referenced the external situation from time to time as it bears on events in Latin America and Caribbean, but in particular in this case with Venezuela, the declaration essentially by President Putin the other day a strategic multipolarity as a fact, and the open discussion between Russia and China about Venezuela, that Venezuela essentially, it seems that Russia and China have decided that Venezuela is not going to be allowed to fail, quote-unquote. And what that means, I guess, is that they're saying that they're not going to allow the United States to make it fail, which means an external challenge to the Monroe Doctrine with all of the implications that it has for the region. And so I just wanted to reference that as we have the rest of this conversation, because that's kind of a change in the objective condition, major change.
Yeah. I don't know if you read Vladimir Putin's speech.
I read it
quite closely. And in it, he says that they will not tolerate any threat by the United States or any aggression by the United States, although they didn't mention the United States by name.
Against any of their allies.
And any aggression against allies of the Russian Federation.
That's right.
Will be met.
Yep, they'll be treated as if it was an attack on Russia. That's essentially which after saying, if you attack us, we reserve the right to use everything we got against you. Then he says, and by the way, if you attack our allies, you're attacking us.
Yes, and Venezuela is very clearly a strategic ally of the Russian Federation and of China.
Yep.
And as we pointed out before in several conversations ago, although Alicia Bárcena, I think she's the Secretary General the Executive Director of ECLAC, the Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean, although she has always, when she talks about the relation, Latin America's relationship with China, she always talks about the relations of countries like Peru and Chile with and Mexico, perhaps with Asia, but she studiedly ignores the fact that Venezuela is China's most important partner in Latin America by far.
Yep.
And that's worth bearing in mind. And staying in that area, it's worth looking at. I'm just looking at the 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth paragraph of the latest declaration of the ALBA countries that was published today in Granma, the Cuban official newspaper. And it says, we repeat our decision to continue promoting the construction of a new international order, a just and inclusive, multi-centric and multipolar, in opposition to the hegemonic and unilateral tendencies currently existing, and based on strict respect for the peoples and the institutions chosen by them, and the diverse cultures that exist on our planet.
Yep.
So they're making a clear acknowledgement of what Vladimir Putin was saying in his speech to the Russian Federation Federal Assembly.
Yep.
And as you say, that's really important context for everything that's going on at the moment in the region. And everybody agrees in the region that what's happening is extremely complex. It's difficult to try and reduce to a few simple factors or components. And that's reflected, for example, here in Central America, the tendency is for the center right and the right to prevail politically. Nicaragua is very much the exception in having a progressive and to the extent possible in the current international economic context, a revolutionary government. And that was reflected over the weekend in the elections that were held for the El Salvadoran legislature, where Arena got a very good result, a very disappointing result for the ruling government party, the FMLN, and President Sanchez Cerén. But I wasn't surprised by that, because I think what you can see happening in El Salvador, in Honduras and Guatemala, and also in Costa Rica to some extent, where the likely contest will be between an extremely right-wing evangelical leader and the existing kind of center-right social democrat governing party. And what happened in El Salvador, I think, reflected that it's the outcome, although it may only be a temporary outcome, we'll see later on in the presidential elections that will happen in, and I think then next year, I'm not sure, but the use of the judicial system to attack political opponents and the politicization of legal institutions in order to achieve right-wing political objectives that they can't achieve through the ballot box or electorally. And the media offensive, the constant media offensive attacking any progressive leaders and inventing accusations that are then taken up and as often as not get reflected in some kind of legal procedure
right.
that's bound to affect the public perception of the target politician,
right.
the target progressive politician. Right. And we've seen that happen across the region.
Right.
And that has also happened in El Salvador, where former President Mauricio Funes was accused of illicitly enriching himself. He felt that he was so unlikely to get a fair trial in El Salvador that he moved to live in Nicaragua, and I think that's still currently the case.
Right.
And also in Guatemala, you've got former progressive president Alvaro Colom, the most progressive president since Jacobo Arbenz, who was overthrown by the CIA in 1954.
Yeah,
he's now in jail as a result of what seemed to be extremely flimsy accusations at best. That have been brought by, under the auspices of the UN-based Commission Against Impunity and Corruption in Guatemala.
Right.
And so you can the hand of the United States is very obvious in all these countries, assisting local allies, advising them on the ways to attack their opponents effectively, in such a way as to influence the perceptions of voters and thus electoral outcomes. Now, if you look and if you shift from that to Brazil, where there's a very the clearest possible example of that, the case against Lula da Silva. Now, there's going to be a decisive judgment over the next few days about whether Lula da Silva will in fact have to do jail time because he's been sentenced to, I think it's 12 years jail for corruption,
right.
based on completely false accusations.
Right, no evidence.
Even the Brazilian media have had to acknowledge that the original accusations on which he was charged were doctored via a database. The Petrobras, the big state oil company, had a database. I've forgotten the name of it now, but that was doctored in such a way as to incriminate Lula da Silva, and that tampering has now come to light. And it was that tampering that formed the basis of the original charges
right.
against Lula da Silva. Now, despite all that, the Public Prosecutor's Office is refusing to acknowledge that, these very clear facts that recently came to light, and they're still calling for Lula to be sent to jail. So
right.
I suspect that the decision will go against him. I don't know what the law is in Brazil because of his age. He may not actually have to physically go to jail. He may just be put under house arrest. But
it means he won't be allowed to run for president, basically.
He won't be allowed to run for president.
Which is the point of all
at
of
a
this.
Time when he is streets ahead of any other candidate.
Right, he'd win tomorrow, except for even with the accusations, even if they had evidence that it were true, he'd probably win. But in any event, he would win, and what they're doing is with the spurious accusations making him ineligible.
Correct. And then you can see that whole process also happening. It's beginning to happen against Rafael Correa in Ecuador. There's the beginnings of a case against him for alleged corruption.
We saw it in Argentina with Cristina. We see it across
now,
the region.
Now, in Cristina, there was an interesting... I don't know if you saw this, Don, but there was a very interesting article in the Página 12, a relatively progressive newspaper. That in the past has been quite critical of Cristina Kirchner for one reason or another when she was in government as president, but they published this article in which the writer points out that, do you remember that in various conversations we discussed the case of Alberto Nisman,
yes.
the former prosecutor who was mysteriously found dead, apparently
right.
by suicide.
Right.
And he was trying to build a case against Cristina Kirchner and her government colleagues
right.
for on completely tenuous grounds, alleging some kind of connection to
the 1990s bombing, right? That actually, right?
Or Amir building bombing,
right? Yeah,
in which large numbers of people were killed. The biggest terrorist attack in Argentina's history, as I understand
which they had nothing to do with. Which everyone, she might not have even been old enough at that point. Instead, the allegations were that even though the right-wing governments that came to power and were in power at the time and then were in power for years afterwards never did anything about it. You started the only investigation of it, you didn't do anything about it either, and therefore you're culpable. That's the strength of their accusation.
Well, and you see, but on top of that, the right wing have been trying to implicate Christina and her colleagues in Nisman's death, suggesting that it may have been a murder.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing about this article is that it establishes that the various arguments that the media, that opposition aligned legal figures have tried to put about, suggesting that Nisman may in fact have been murdered rather than committing suicide. And that the first thing, it's absolutely clear that Nisman committed suicide, but the right wing have tried to use circumstantial evidence to suggest that he may have been murdered.
Right.
And now this there's been a report establishing that at the time that the alleged murder is supposed to have taken place, Nisman was still alive. He was supposed to have been murdered. He was supposed to have been murdered early in the small hours of one morning, around 2 o'clock in the morning, sometime. And in fact, he was still alive using his mobile phone, and that's been established shortly after 7 o'clock that on the day of his death. So. Now, the reason that this article is important is because, apart from establishing that and publishing it and making it, putting that into the public domain,
right.
What the author of the article, whose name I forget, explains is that one of the reasons that it's been so difficult to clarify what happened to Alberto Nisman is that the United States authorities, the FBI, have appropriated data from Yahoo, which is the server on which Nisman had his email, and also from WhatsApp, and they've appropriated that data from those big US corporations, and they're refusing to share it with the Argentinian authorities, or they're only sharing it on a very selective basis. So that, what does that mean? That indicates yet again, it's almost a footnote to everything that we've been talking about in terms of the judicialization of politics at the behest of the United States in Latin America. But what that detail establishes is that U.S. institutions like the FBI are deliberately intervening and manipulating the legal processes in Latin America, in this case in Argentina, so as to damage the chances of a fair trial for individuals falsely accused, like Christina Kirchner and like Lula da Silva. There's direct U.S. intervention in those cases, no doubt at all.
Right.
And that's what this article demonstrates. So not just the intervention of U.S. institutions like the FBI, but the fact that major U.S. corporations like Yahoo and WhatsApp and their owners work, in effect, as a single repressive apparatus of control, filtering the available information from their servers for political purposes, not just domestically but internationally too.
Well, we've been seeing that phenomenon develop here as well with the Russiagate, for example. We saw exactly that with the the 16 or 17 intelligence agencies and most of the Congress and the executives from Facebook and Twitter and Christ knows who else all, you know, talking about, well, the Russians did it, and we have to change the way everybody communicates in a way that insulates us against that happening in the future. You know, pretty big stuff, given that almost all human communication is now mediated by one of these characters.
Right, right. So, I just thought it was interesting to explain to our listeners that detail, because it confirms, yeah, you know, it's a very concrete confirmation of things that we've been discussing for a long time now.
Yep.
So then, looking around the rest of the region, and in Cuba, there will be elections later this month. I think they're next weekend,
right,
to the Cuban legislature, and that will eventually lead, I'm not sure exactly when, I think it's sometime in April, once the legislature, the new legislature, is in session, they will have to elect the new president. And it's likely that Raul Castro will step down, and he will be replaced by one of the next generation of, right, Cuban leaders. So it'll be interesting to see who eventually takes on the mantle of Raul and Fidel leading the Cuban Revolution.
Yeah, I'm going to be there later this month for a week and change, so maybe I'll get to.
Well, maybe I should interview you.
Yeah, we could talk about that later on. Yep. And we've got about 3 minutes left, so we'll maybe take a pick of the long list we still have to discuss.
Well, and obviously one of the major things that people are concerned about is the election campaign in Colombia, and the Colombia, of course, is one of the Lima Group countries, so critical of Venezuela. But there, and if you look at the figures, and in last year, I think it was over 300 community and indigenous leaders were murdered. And so far this year, over 30 have been. So, and imagine if those figures were from Venezuela, the outcry would be enormous. But there's,
well, please, I mean, here's the United States. In Venezuela, they're anti-democratic horror shows because there's socialists among them. In Colombia, they're just fine, even though they got death squads.
Right.
You know, come on.
even in the presidential campaign, Gustavo Petro, a leading progressive presidential candidate, who might even stand a chance of getting through to the runoff, because in Colombia it's very rare for the presidential elections to be decided on the first round.
Right.
And he was attacked, I think, in Cucuta, up on the Venezuelan border. And while at a campaign rally, I don't think he was injured, but it's very clear that the right wing and the paramilitaries are trying to promote a climate in which progressive candidates have to be very careful about where and when they go out on the campaign trail, and to the extent that the FARC political party, which is trying to participate in the elections, has had to suspend its campaigning because so many of its members are at risk. And I think it's over 40 members of the FARC who demobilized have now been murdered in Colombia. And so when people talk about, are there conditions for free and fair elections in Venezuela, they should be looking at Colombia, because certainly conditions for free and fair elections in Colombia do not exist.
Yeah.
And given the climate of intimidation and political violence and outright murder.
Yeah, I mean, Petro says he was saying yesterday that the prosecutors haven't done a thing about the attack on him.
And they're not going to.
Yeah, right. And at the same time, there's a riot at an Uribe rally in Cauca, and nobody's having a problem with that either. That they're allowed to rally, to riot.
Yeah, so I know that's just another example of the continuing double standards that are so obvious in Western media coverage of events in Latin America and in European Union and United States diplomatic positions
over
events in the region.
Well, hopefully we're doing something to at least, you know, crack a little bit open, let some daylight come in on all of that. Tony, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to speak with you, and it's very useful for our audience, for sure, to have an understanding of what's going on down there.
Okay, thanks a million, Don. Let's talk when you're in Cuba.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thanks. Take care.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.